You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I am such an idiot. I just did something I am incredibly proud of and incredibly happy about. It's like the happiest I've been in years doing something. And I just did a podcast about it, which you're about to listen to, where I describe the whole story of why I did what I did, but I don't even tell what I did or how to get it until the end. I'm the worst self-promoter, and I'm so horrible at self-promotion. So this is what I did. I made a course about writing. Forget all my newsletters and courses about financial stuff. This has nothing to do with that. I made a course, how to write and publish a book in 30 days. And what I really mean is how to write a quality book. I give all these book concepts where you can write your own unique book using these concepts. And I describe how step by step. I give all my writing tips, my best writing tips. I go through all the questions I ask myself when I start a story or a book or a blog post. In particular, what are the six U's of this writing that I'm doing? Who am I? Why am I? And why now? I ask myself that question before every book and every article. I ask myself, am I afraid to hit publish? Because that's a good sign if I am. And I go over, again, the whole craft of writing. I also step-by-step show you how to publish. And you can find the course. All the stuff I say at the end, basically, I'm just going to quickly say right now, jamesaltushershow.com/writing. You can find the course, jamesaltushershow.com/writing. I'm going to describe the story that led to this course and a lot more detail about what the course is about, but it's something I'm so proud of. I've never been self-promotional in one of these in the past 1,500 podcasts. I'm really proud of it. I'm a little nervous to launch it. I hope people get it. And if you get it, write me a note at altucher@gmail.com. I encourage you to write. One thing I will say, which I did not say in the rest of this podcast, is that being a writer, even writing one book, and I've written now over 20, even writing one book changed my life. It gave me so many opportunities. It gave me so many life-changing experiences. I'll give you an example. After I wrote my very first book, Fidelity, the big company, Fidelity, the mutual fund company, they asked me to be a spokesperson for them based on just my first book. And I made a lot of money. I made much more money being a spokesperson for Fidelity for 10 years than I made from the book itself. And I will tell you this also, if you're trying to be a consultant or a public speaker or even hired for a job or even raise money for a hedge fund or a business, if two people have equal skills and are equal in every way, but one person wrote a book and the other didn't, the other side will pick the person who wrote the book for many reasons, and you could probably guess at them, but I've seen this in action so many times. Writing books has changed my life. I want the process of writing a book to change your life. I made this course, write and publish a book in 30 days. And again, it's not going to be some slap-hazard book. It's going to be a quality book. All my writing tips are in there, and you'll see why. It's a very specific reason why 30 days. And you can find it at jamesaltuchershow.com/writing. But I'm about to do a podcast, which is the whole story of why I did this course and my own history in writing. And only at the end do I talk about this course. But knock yourself out, listen to the podcast, then go to jamesaltuchershow.com/writing, and you will see what I think is the best course ever on writing. So enjoy, and thank you very much. And drop me a line at altucher@gmail.com if you have any questions.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
For the first time in a really long time, I am super excited about something I've created. The whole journey of this starts in 1990. And what happened was, as these things go, I had a crush on this girl, and she was majoring in English literature. You know, I had just graduated college. I was going to graduate school. And this friend of mine, who always called himself a writer, he had like that kind of hair you could like, you know, he just looked like a writer. That's what I'm trying to say.
How do you describe a writer? This writer has a look?
Yeah, like a little unshaven. He just had like this like wild curly hair, almost like me a little bit, but even more so.
Did he wear glasses?
He had glasses. He was always talking about like James Joyce and Thomas Pynchon. These are like great writers from the past, but they're unreadable. Like, okay, some of James Joyce is readable, but Thomas Pynchon's book, Gravity's Rainbow, which is like the super, like, I don't say Thomas Pynchon's a pseudo-intellectual, but every pseudo-intellectual in college like loves Gravity's Rainbow by Thomas Pynchon. And by James Joyce, they don't just like, so James Joyce has a collection of short stories, The Dubliners, that was fine. Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man, that was great. But Ulysses is unreadable. And everyone was always talking about Ulysses and Gravity's Rainbow, and they were writing about philosophy, and but not like someone else, like their own. They were 18 years old or 19 years old coming up with their own like philosophy that would be better than, you know, it would be their understanding of the world at the age of 19. Anyway, this girl, Maria, who ended up writing on The Simpsons, actually, like many years later.
Oh, really?
Yes. I forgot to ask Mike, who we've had, the producer of The Simpsons that we've had on the podcast right. many times. But I always follow the adventures of Mike and Denise on Facebook. They travel all over the world now. But anyway, she liked this guy, Mark, who was my roommate, who was the pseudo writer. He's never written anything. He never wrote anything before, and he's never written anything since. But I was thinking, maybe, I mean, I wasn't accustomed to having girlfriends, and maybe if I became a writer, girls that I like would like me. Sounds like a stupid reason to do something, but if you think about it, that is the reason why most people do anything.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go from this to Charles Darwin, as I do. And Darwin wrote a book, actually.
While you're looking for the book, that's the whole point. I was in the music industry. It's just that I like a girl. I'm like, I can, you know, play piano to serenade her. So that I started picking up piano and guitars.
Well, it's very interesting that you bring that up because, so everyone knows Darwin by his classic book, The Origin of Species. And it talks about what we now refer to as Darwinism, which is, you know, natural selection and so on. But he also wrote another, like, not widely read book. I believe, if my memory is correct, it was called The Art of Sexual Selection. And he explained why art and even writing exists and why musicians exist. Because musicians and artists, as much as we can claim they add value to society, and I won't argue that, I think they add value to society. But back in, like, caveman days, they didn't hunt and they didn't gather. So they didn't get food and they didn't prepare the food, which is what, you know, what the natural selection, what the origin of species was mostly about, is that the descendants would survive of the people who were really good at hunting or the people who were really good at gathering and cooking and so on. So this is, you know, Darwinism. This is natural selection, that an entire species will evolve based on their abilities to hunt and gather food or for other species, you know, get predators or in some way, you know, get sustenance for the tribe. And other people would survive who are good at protecting the food and protecting the tribe and cooking the food and preparing the food. So anyway, why would artists survive? Like, they're the weirdos who kind of like draw in caves and whatever. Like, what are they doing to help the tribe? You know, and the point is, women and men would mate with each other based on, like, a woman would mate with the alpha male because he's going to protect her and make sure she has food and their children have food and so on. And vice versa, the alpha male might mate with the alpha female if she's the best at, like, protecting the food and cooking it and so on. But here's the thing about artists. Right from the beginning, art was a scam because what the artist is basically, and this is just Darwin's theory. Who knows if it's true or not? Who knows if any of this is just made up and Darwin doesn't know what he's talking about? But Darwin's point was is that people, men or women, mated with the artist because the artist is sort of displaying that he is so far superior to everything going on in the tribe that he could spend his time not hunting, not gathering, but just creating art because it's special. He says, my art is special, so I don't need to do that other stuff. And everyone would believe the artist. And so he was beyond the alpha male. And so people would want to mate with him or her. That was Darwin's point, is that the artist, why art exists, is because the artist would betray him or herself as so far beyond the normal natural selection process of hunting and gathering that people would say, oh, that art is amazing. He must be communicating with the gods or whatever. And so The artist's descendants survived because he would have his choice of mate.
So basically, artists are just a scammer.
Essentially, that's what Darwin was saying. And, obviously, art evolved so that dangers were communicated through art and through storytelling. Like, instead of saying to your kids, don't go in the woods over there, there's a bad tribe that will kill us, you say, oh, the demons were born in that forest and God, the gods don't want us to go into that forest. So through storytelling and mythology and religion, very important messages were communicated from generation to generation. So perhaps that was the role of the artist and that's why they were beyond the alpha male. But according to Darwin, the artist has extra mating material, so it was beyond the hunting. So anyway, the long story is that this is the reason why many people do anything. It's why a lot of people want to get money. It's why a lot of people want to be a famous actor or movie star or writer or artist or sculptor or whatever. And of course, like anything, all of this has evolved and people actually enjoy art. They enjoy painting. They enjoy sculpting. They enjoy making music. And billions of people enjoy listening to music. I initially didn't really know much about writing. I had never taken a writing class in college. I was a computer science major. But all of a sudden, this light bulb went off in my head. And I was like, huh, writing. Here's this girl I had a massive crush on. Like, I felt like I was in love with her. But she liked my roommate, who was, quote unquote, a writer. Never having written, never wrote again. He actually became a computer programmer, and I went into writing. So I go back to graduate school in computer science, and I was obsessed with writing, and I was obsessed with reading because the two go hand in hand. You know, to be a great writer, you also should be, not necessary, but you also should be a great reader. So you see and learn all the techniques of other writers. So I started writing. I had an idea for a novel, and it was, speaking of Thomas Pynchon, the plot was closely related to his most readable book, which is a book, a little novella called The Crying of Lot 49. I started writing this novel and I would write about 3,000 words a day. So I woke up in the morning and all I would do is write. I wrote about 3,000 words a day. And in about a year, I was thrown out of graduate school because all I was doing was writing. I also write tons of short stories. I only wrote fiction. So I wrote tons of short stories. I wrote one novel, then I wrote a second novel, and I was always using the printer to print up dozens or even in some cases hundreds of copies of my stories or books, and I would send them out to agents and publishers. I only got rejected, and it was all form rejection letters. Like, I never even once got something like, hey, this is interesting, keep up the good work. I never even got that, but it didn't depress me. Like, you know, there's something called Dunning-Kruger bias, which we've talked about before on this podcast. And Dunning-Kruger bias is this belief that you're better than you are. So it's this idea that 9 out of 10 people think they're an above average driver, which is impossible. Like, you know, only 4 out of 10 are above the median, the middle. I would say 9 out of 10 people think they're a great negotiator. 9 out of 10 people think they're a good judge of character. 9 out of 10 people think they're good at poker. There's lots of categories where people think they're smarter than they are. And I usually Dunning-Kruger bias is considered bad. Like, oh, it's bad to fool yourself into thinking you're better than you are. But I am the best. I'm an above average Dunning-Kruger bias person. Like, I have Dunning-Kruger bias about everything. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. So I would say, let's say novel number one, it was like 500 pages. And I thought, this is clearly the best novel ever in all of English literature. And I would have my friends read it and they would do it to be nice, but I don't even know if any of them actually read it. They would just say, oh, that was great. But I don't know if anybody read it. I would literally go up to girls in a bar and say, hey, this is a chapter of my book. Would you read it? Like, I was so stupid. Like, I had no social skills whatsoever. And I really believe that somebody would read a random, like in the middle of a bar, in the middle of the night, would read, a complete stranger would read, be so excited. Oh, you wrote a chapter in a book, your own? And they would read it and they would magically fall in love with me right then and there. I mean, I would see these girls give like a look to the bartender. This guy's a weirdo. But I wrote one novel. Nothing happened. I wrote another novel. And all along, I'm writing short stories too. So, and every day I was reading novels and short story writers. Like, some of my favorite short story writers were Dennis Johnson, Lori Moore, Grace Paley, Tim O'Brien, who we've had on the podcast.
Yep.
Super grateful a great writer like that has come on the podcast. I read so much during this time just to kind of learn the craft, because I had no one to teach me the craft. I really knew nobody who was a writer. I never took a writing class. I was in graduate school for computer science, so I wasn't really out there taking writing classes. I was failing my computer science classes because I was doing so much writing. And then one time I entered a 3-day novel writing contest. So I did that. And I asked my girlfriend at the time if she would read it, this novel I wrote in 3 days. And she broke up with me right then. Like, that was
the— Is it because of the novel or is it because of the face?
Well, hey, what are you saying about my face? probably a little bit of both. Also, the fact that I was constantly begging her to read everything I wrote. She was like, I thought we were going to take a break. That's it. I'm out. This is over. So that was over. And then I wrote another novel. So I wrote 4 novels during this period. I wrote dozens of maybe like 60 different short stories. And I will say, by the end of this period, and this particular period in my writing lasted from 1990 to 1994. And this particular period in my writing, maybe by the end, I was pretty good at short story writing. Like, I think I could write at that point, I was able to write a decent short story. And I really loved— short stories are very different than novels. They don't have as much of a plot. Like, you wouldn't really have the plot of a Stephen King novel in the form of a short story. The best short story writers are sort of like half poets, half fiction writers. They're not good at plotting, but they're really good with language, and they're good at character, you know, making a really in-depth character. And their language is almost poetic. Not poetic in this flowery way, but like real poetry. There's like BS poetry that's all flowery and beautiful, but then there's like real poetry, which is, you could think of almost as like a one-page short story that's just beautiful. And I would say by the end of this period, I was reading so many short stories and great writers who wrote great short stories that maybe I was getting a little good at short stories. I was not getting good at novel writing. I was really not the best at plot at this time. So then I figured, because at the time I still had the mindset, I am the best writer in history, the most talented person ever. I figured the only thing I was missing was connections. So I applied for a job at HBO. And per my technique, now if you read the book Skip the Line, I always have kind of these backdoor ways to get involved in things I want to get involved in. So I couldn't apply to HBO and say, hey, I want to write all your TV shows and your movies, because that was pretty competitive and I couldn't compete with anybody who was already doing that for HBO. So because I knew computer science and I knew how to program a computer, I applied to the IT department. This is the department that would make the programs where they would schedule the TV shows and they would handle all the accounting and so on. So I applied to HBO. And as I've mentioned before on this podcast, I applied to JP Morgan just because I needed to get to New York City. I was living in Pittsburgh where I went to graduate school at Carnegie Mellon for computer science. I get both jobs. JP Morgan offered $80,000 a year, which was like a huge sum to me. And HBO offered $40,000 a year. And I figured no matter which job I take, I'm rich. Like the biggest I've ever made before was I had a stipend as a grad student for $12,000 a year. So I took the HBO job, even though it was half the salary of the JP Morgan job, because I knew HBO would have more connections. Maybe I would make a movie or a TV show at HBO, which I considered the best television network on the planet.
It still is, right?
I would say so. But here's the thing. This is just general advice. You know some place, a good place to work when you could find dozens and dozens of ex-employees who go off to run other companies or be high-level executives in other companies in the same industry. Former employees of HBO ended up running Showtime, Viacom, Time Warner, high-level executives at Netflix, high-level executives in Amazon's original program. Like the very first Amazon show that wasn't popular, I now forget what it was run by an ex-HBO employee.
Oh, wow.
Almost all of Showtime's top executives were former HBO employees. Right now, the CEO of Starz was the former CEO of HBO. And you see that in a lot of industries, like PayPal. They always refer to the PayPal mafia. A lot of ex-employees of PayPal ended up running companies like YouTube and, of course, Tesla and SpaceX because of Elon Musk and Palantir and on. There's maybe hundreds of companies run by ex-PayPal employees. So you could kind of tell what a great company is when they're the ones that feed the executives and the creatives of the rest of the industry. So I really admired HBO as a company, and I would read it was the first time I read the Wall Street Journal. I would look for all references to HBO. I really studied HBO. And this is just some advice when you start working at a company. Don't be an employee, meaning you're going to be an employee, but not in the traditional sense. I wrote a book once called The Rich Employee, and it was about how, like when I wrote Choose Yourself, everyone thought I meant, oh, you should quit your job and be an entrepreneur. It's not what I meant really. But you could be an employee and still choose yourself. So I wrote a book called The Rich Employee, which means that become an entrepreneur within a corporate setting. So, and in order to do that, you have to really feel the culture and the vision and like live the vision of the company. So I researched HBO and I really believed in the vision of HBO, which was that, sure, we could show you all the latest movies that were big hits, but even better, HBO was the first pay cable channel to feature their own original programming. And of course, we all know they're some of their biggest hits early on, Sex and the City, Sopranos, Larry Sanders Show. Earlier than that, they had a great show called Dream On. I don't know why you can't find it on HBO Max. And ever since then, they've had great HBO shows. Like, Jay, what's your favorite recent great HBO show?
Oh, The Last of Us.
Oh, The Last of Us. And you know what? I did not watch that, but John and Robin were obsessed with it. They watched it every day. They said it was the best show ever.
I wouldn't say the best show ever, but like recent memory, like within the past 2 years, it's definitely the best show ever.
I watched recently The White Lotus, which was great.
Yes.
And Succession I'm watching right now, which is, I don't want to put it in the great category. It's not as good as, for instance, HBO shows like Rome or The Wire, but it's up there. I enjoy Succession. So those are the main HBO shows I'm watching right now. But there's always like an HBO show happening at any time that's great. But I will say many other channels are as good as HBO, but that's partly because ex-HBO employees ended up running those companies. So they brought their flavor with them and all their connections and so on. So I did, in fact, actually start shooting a TV show for HBO. It's a long story. I'll get into it some other time. It was me interviewing people at 3 a.m. I've spoken about this before on a Wednesday night in New York City. So I would interview, I had never done anything other than computer programming before, but suddenly for HBO, I was interviewing prostitutes, drug dealers, pimps, homeless people. I was going to jail for the night. I was, and seeing what was happening. I was hanging out with all the homeless kids in Tompkins Square Park and, you know, squatting where this underground radio station. I had lots of interesting experiences for a 3-year period. I shot it as a web show because I made their web. I used the web as a backdoor way to get into the entertainment side. I built their website and I said, look, you need original web shows just like you need original TV shows. And then Sheila Nevins, who's been on this podcast, she was the head of documentary. She said, why don't you do this as a TV show for us? We need something to replace the Real Sex series because we're running out of material. And so, you know, I tried doing that for them. I pitched many ideas to them and ultimately nothing worked as these things go. But I got even more experience writing. I was still writing, not 3,000 words a day because I didn't have time anymore. But I was, for my 3 a.m. web show, I was writing descriptions for each episode. It was one episode a week. And I was writing about all the people I encountered. Plus I had photos, video, and so on. It's probably like the first podcast on the World Wide Web. And Time Magazine mentioned the website. It was one of the most popular websites out there. This is during a time when there were almost no websites. So, and it got me started on my business, Reset, which made websites for entertainment companies. I'd show HBO and people would say, we want that. Like even Con Edison, the utility company, said, we want something like that. And I'm like, are you sure?
What if, because right now, I mean, I think like a couple of years ago, you did mention like, you know, how do like website right now profit? They should make their own show. What if Con Edison make their own show?
Yeah, well, this is my point actually. And I've spoken to the Brian Chesky who started Airbnb mm-hmm. about this. And I should probably speak to more websites about this. But essentially any website with traffic could be a TV network. Like Netflix did not make original shows at first. They just rented you DVDs. But because their website had so much traffic, it was a natural, and because they were in the entertainment business, sort of, I mean, they just were distributing DVDs. They weren't creating anything. But because their website had so much traffic, they had the insight, hey, we can make shows with this that appear on our website. And then, of course, when streaming started, they had a streaming service. So I approached Airbnb and I said, you have so much traffic. Why don't you do the same thing? And here's the show I pitched to Airbnb. Every week, I'll go to or every month, I'll go to a different city and I'll stay in the worst Airbnb and like usually the cheapest and the most expensive Airbnb. So like in New York City, for instance, you could Airbnb for like $5 a night or $30 a night, a tent in someone's backyard in the worst part of the Bronx, which is like a dangerous area. So for $30 a night, And the idea was too, I would bring comedians with me. We'd have a party. It would be funny. And then the most expensive place in New York, I forget what it was, but it was essentially a palace somewhere in, you know, Soho or whatever, like 12,000 square feet. And, you know, for $100,000 a night, you can rent it. And it was crazy. They seemed really excited, but then they never got back to me because, okay, maybe that was just small potatoes for them. I don't know. But my point then was any site with a lot of traffic can be a TV network and have original content. And HBO sort of proved that, then Netflix sort of proved it, and so on. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period. And I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, Your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. During this time, I was writing and I was excited about writing and I was still an avid reader, but I wasn't writing really novels at this point. I was writing for this 3 a.m. idea and I was getting familiar with TV writing and documentary writing and so on. So it was training in its own way. Then I started a business making entertaining websites. I don't mean for this to be my biography, but fast forward in 2002, I had 2 skills at that point. Other than knowing how to make a website and computer stuff, like forget computer stuff. But I had already started day trading and was starting my hedge fund. So I had financial skills and I had writing skills. I had been writing at this point for 10 years. So I had some skills and I didn't know I had a unique style at this point, but I had a flavor to my writing.
So I'm just curious, what would you say your unique style back then? I'm sure your style have changed.
I had like kind of, I would say things no one else would say. So if I was writing about I'll get to it. So I wrote letters to a bunch of hedge fund managers saying, hey, can I work for you? Because I wanted to work for a hedge fund. I didn't want to run my own hedge fund and I wanted to get experience. And I wrote a letter to a bunch of financial writers and no one at all responded. So then this is where the 10 ideas a day come in. I researched each person I was writing to, came up with 10 ideas for them, and then wrote them the ideas and said, there's no need to ever get back to me. Well, one person who got back to me, several people got back to me at that point, but one person, I had pitched Jim Cramer, here's 10 article ideas you should write about stocks. And he was, you know, a contributor on CNBC. He didn't have mad money then, and he had started this website, thestreet.com, which was all articles. And he wrote back instantly and he said, these are great. Why don't you write for us? So in January or in December of 2002, I wrote my first published article. After 12 years of writing, not counting the 3 a.m. stuff for HBO, I wrote the first article that I was actually paid for. I was paid $200. I framed that check. Many years later, Jim signed the back of the check. I never cashed that check. And I framed it. I don't know where it is now because I threw out all my belongings a few years ago, but somebody, it's probably in the garbage. But I wrote an article about stocks that were trading below the amount of cash they had in the bank, which was ridiculous. But I kind of started to have this style where that became very distinct, where I would write, instead of just writing, oh, Apple reported earnings, they made $20 a share, it was below expectations, blah, 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 some boring article, I would write about my experiences, like, oh my gosh, this is how I day traded Apple, and then I almost went broke, this is a big mistake I made. So I would admit my failures and my flaws. I wouldn't just, and this is, by the way, how humans will continue to beat AI. You can't just summarize news. AI can do that already better than humans. Mm. You have to have your own unique perspective, and AI will have their own unique perspective eventually, but it won't be your unique perspective. And so people will want to listen to you and read you because you have your own unique perspective. And so I did. And so I did that for a year or two. The Financial Times contacted me, which is the biggest financial newspaper maybe in the world, next to the Wall Street Journal. It's a British paper. It's on that like orange or pink paper. They asked me if I wanted to start writing for them. They liked my writing at the Street. And so I started writing for them. And I remember I was really nervous. Oh my gosh, the prestigious Financial Times. And so I wrote these very conservative articles like, this is how Warren Buffett invests and here's some of his stock picks. This is how banks work and so on. And Lionel Barber, the editor of the US FT, and he became the editor-in-chief for many years after this, he called me into the office. He said, these are good articles. And I said, oh, thank you. And he says, you're fired. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he said, we don't want you to write good articles. That's like everyone else here writes good articles. We want you to write like James Altucher. So if you don't come up with something batshit crazy like James Altucher would, I don't want another article from you. And so he was a great editor. He really encouraged me to take my style and amp it up. My editor at that time, you know, he was the boss, so he was the editor in chief. But my specific editor, this guy, John Authors, he got so nervous with my writing style. He was like, they're never going to let this go. They're never going to let this go. But I always would go over his head, sadly for him, and Lionel Barber would say, publish it. And they would just get crazier and crazier because I was trying to see if they would ever fire me, and they never did. I mean, eventually, all good things come to an end, but not for any bad reason. And then the Wall Street Journal had me write for them. One interesting story there, very famous writer now. She's got a great newsletter, great perspective, Barry Weiss. She wrote for the New York Times, but she thought they were too alt-left or whatever. I don't know. And she started her own Substack, and now she makes a great living on her Substack newsletter. She's been on Joe Rogan. She's a great writer of, has good political opinions. And she was my grammar editor at the Wall Street Journal, like straight out of college. So I know her from then. And then I just found out this weekend, Jay Merrick, a mutual friend of ours who's also been on this podcast, Merrick told me that she's from Pittsburgh, where I went to grad school. And her father, her father is this guy, Lou Weiss, who I made a website for 25 years ago.
What type of website?
It was he had a wedding store, and I made a website where he could sell wedding stuff.
I love reading Barry's stuff.
Yeah, Barry's great.
She has her own. She has her own network now.
Yeah, we should have her on the podcast. She's fun.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm going to get to a long story, and I'm going to make it shorter because this is not how I intended for this to go. But eventually, people wanted me to write a book. A publisher reached out to me, Wiley, Pamela Van Giesen was the editor there. She's retired now. And I wrote my first book. It was a financial book, Trade Like a Hedge Fund. Then I wrote another one, Trade Like Warren Buffett. Then I wrote another one, Super Cash. So I was writing financial books, and these were my first books. And they were very successful in the financial world. And they were priced very high. Like Trade Like a Hedge Fund was $70, but it was one of their best sellers. USA Today said it was one of the best financial books ever. The Stock Traders Almanac had it featured as their book of the year. And so I was able to do financial books. And then I wrote The Forever Portfolio for Portfolio/Penguin, a book for the Wall Street Journal, The Investor's Guide to Investing in the Apocalypse. And I wrote a bunch of financial books, but I didn't really enjoy that. And I wanted to write books my style. And I wanted to write about the time, like when I was day trading, when I went broke and I lost my house and the IRS was after me and how I was so depressed, I was almost suicidal. And then I started writing the 10 ideas a day. So I started writing that kind of, those kind of blogs. And I got every blog post, I got a much bigger audience than I had ever gotten before with the financial stuff. And I had a pretty big audience for the financial stuff. And I started writing for all sorts of publications, like a yoga journal, a psychology journal, a Gen Z type of magazine about relationships, The Good Men Project. I wrote for crack.com. So I started writing for every website I could think of to basically, like, no matter where, started writing for TechCrunch about my entrepreneurship days. And everywhere you look, I wanted it. My strategy is that I was everywhere. No matter what journal you looked at, I was everywhere. And then I started writing books that were more about my, not about like BS financial stuff. Not that my financial stuff was BS, but I didn't enjoy it. But I wrote like Choose Yourself, which was about how ultimately I wouldn't get upset if somebody didn't want to use my writing or someone didn't want to have me on TV. I chose myself. Whatever I wanted to do, I would figure out how to do it. And that's possible in today's day and age. You want a radio show? Do a podcast. You want a TV show? Build your YouTube channel. You want to publish a book? Well, that's what I'm going to get to because I just made a course about writing and publishing your first book. So I wrote Choose Yourself. It was a bestseller, Wall Street Journal bestseller. It sold millions of copies. I wrote Reinvent Yourself. I just finished Skip the Line. I wrote a book with Charlamagne the God, who's a huge radio host, 5 million listeners. I don't know. I've written all together. I've written a children's book. I've written a comic book. I wrote a novel under a pseudonym, which is called It's called The Autobiography of Prince George, and he was only 3 days old. And so I wrote it from the point of view of his butler. Let me see if I can find it because it's under a different name. Sometimes I actually can't find it. Oh yeah. The Autobiography of Prince George Alexander Louis Windsor. Oh, and it's got 15 ratings and an entire 2.9 stars. And the reviews all hated it. I think there's 2 5-star reviews. Interesting concept. But here's a 1-star review. Rubbish. Suggestions in this book are crude and ludicrous. I would not recommend it to anyone, even though it was a freebie. But I wrote that book in 3 days and published it on Amazon. And it was a fun little book. And it's only like 10 pages or something. I don't know. But so they were right to give it bad reviews. It wasn't a good book. But, you know, my books have been bestsellers. My books have been very successful. But here's what I enjoy most lately is that so many of my friends and colleagues and family ask me, hey, I just wrote an article. I just wrote a book. I just wrote an essay for my homework, whatever. And they say, can you take a look at it? And so I would say, sure. And I really loved helping them, almost teaching them how to write. And I would basically, the best is, we would get on, even if we were in different locations, we'd get on Google Docs and I'd be on the phone with them or on Zoom or whatever. And I would make a change and explain why I was making the change. And so I would never be critical. I was always constructive, but I would go over each change. Like, here's why I changed this sentence. Here's, because, you know, maybe you already wrote a similar sentence or had a similar word on a prior page. So I'm going to change this so it uses a different word. This sentence has too many adjectives, too many adverbs. Let's tighten it up. You don't need this first paragraph. You know, one of the pieces of advice I always have is take out, whenever you write something, even if you know this rule, take out the first paragraph and the last paragraph. And, you know, and I would always walk people through, like, why did you write this? What are you afraid of if you hit publish? Like, I never write something unless I'm afraid to hit publish.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium-iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
I wrote an article once, why I don't believe that any war is worth it. And so many people got upset at me, particularly since I wrote this on, I think, July 4th. And I said the Revolutionary War wasn't worth it and blah, blah, blah. I've probably changed my opinion on this one. We should do a change opinion podcast on this topic. But
yes,
unless I was afraid, or you know, for TechCrunch, I would write such insane entrepreneurial stories that I was always convinced this is the last time they're ever going to let me write for them, and everyone is going to mock me and people will spit on my kids at school because I wrote this and whatever. So unless I was afraid to hit publish, I would not hit publish. So I would always, with people I'm helping with their writing, I would always ask them, what are you afraid of? If you're not afraid of something, then it's just as a boring book or an article or a blog post or whatever. What chances are you taking? You've got to take, just like with investing, you've got to take risks to have great rewards. And that really, you know, changed the way a lot of people wrote. People, you know, even just recently, like Merrick, who's going to come on this podcast soon to discuss his brand new book. I spent a year working with him and his co-author going over all of these ideas, how to write a story, why storytelling is important in a book, not just the ideas, but the storytelling. Ultimately, you have to be an entertainer. What are you scared of? So I would spend months sometimes helping some of these people with writing. And, you know, Avitek, who's been on this podcast, he's my chess coach. Sometimes I look at his blog posts and he's a very good writer to begin with. So it's a pleasure to work with someone who's a really good writer, and he sort of naturally comes to it, but it's a real pleasure to kind of go over his writing. And I always do it. I make sure I'm never critical. I'm all my suggestions are very constructive. I work really hard at trying to teach well, and I love teaching writing. This is the activity, writing is the activity I've done longer than anything else and more consistently than anything else. I've been writing almost every day since 1990, so 33 years. So here's what I did. You know, this is why I'm such a bad at any kind of like self-advertising or self-promotion. I wait all the way till the end of this podcast to describe what I did. I made a course about writing for the first time. And it's not related to any of my financial stuff. It's on Udemy, U-D-E-M-Y, which is an online learning platform. I'm launching it today with this podcast. It's called How to Write and Publish a Book in 30 Days. And I'm serious. Like, I will teach you how to write, not just write, but write well, and then step by step, how to publish and publish so it feels professionally published in just 30 days. And even coming up with the ideas, I came up with four book concepts, what I call book concepts, where even if 1,000 people all started with the same concept, they will write incredibly different books. With each concept, I go through it step by step, how to take this idea, how to research it, how to add your own stories to this, and in less than 30 days, write the book and write a great book. And I describe, so here are some of the sections.
Can I add something?
Yes, you can add something.
Yeah. So I was just there for the course when we were shooting it.
You shot all the videos. There. This is a video course. You shot all the video.
Yeah.
You're the director and producer.
So on top of like the full concepts, James also talked about like time management. Like what are the myths that can be debunked when writing a book, which is great. And also like the mindset of writing the book. Like what are something that he does before writing a book as well?
Yeah. Like there's one section, 9 ways to overcome writer's block, where I talk about all the times I've experienced writer's block and how, and I still deal with writer's block. I had to write an article the other day and oh my God, I had huge writer's block because anyway, that's a whole story. But I talk about the FK score system to determine if your writing is readable or not. Most people don't know anything about that. But basically there's this score that tells you what grade level your writing is at. And good writing, like let's take the book Old Man in the Sea, which helped Ernest Hemingway win the Nobel Prize. It's probably his best book. That is written at a fifth grade reading level. That fifth and sixth grade reading levels are the grade level you want to write at. And there's a way to calculate it called the FK score. And I talk about that. I talk about the Warren Buffett 525 rule, which I've spoken about before in this podcast, but I apply it to writing. I talk about, is AI your competitor? How to beat AI? I talk about my favorite first lines in books. So the very most important sentence, 2 sentences you could write in a book are is the first line and is the last line. And then almost like a fractal, like the very most important words in each chapter is the first line and the last line in the chapter. Each paragraph, the first line and the last time. In fact, there's a technique of speed reading, which is just read the first line and the last line of every paragraph. Or if you're really pressed for time, read the first line and the last line of every chapter and so on.
I'm just curious, on the spot, will you be able to think of your favorite first line? I just want to give them the taste.
I'll talk about 2 first lines right now that I really love. Like a first line in just one line will capture the soul of a book and will make you really feel what the writer / the main character of the book was intending. So, here's Albert Camus, who wrote The Stranger. Albert Camus also won the Nobel Prize in Literature, I think in 1957. He died when he was very young, and he was a very well-known absurdist philosopher and a great novelist. He wrote this very short novel called The Stranger. The very first line is, "Mother died today. Or maybe yesterday, I can't be sure." So if you break apart that first line, first off, you know, they always say for murder mysteries, and this is not a murdery mystery, this is like a more literary novel, but they always say in murder mysteries, you know, someone has to die in the first 3 pages. Well, here it's the very first line, "Mother died today, or maybe yesterday, I can't be sure." So there's death, but there's also this weird confusion. Like this is someone's son saying this about his mother, and he says, "Or maybe yesterday." Like, why is he so confused? What is it about this person? What is off about this person that he doesn't know if she died today or yesterday? And then he says, "I can't be sure." Why can't he be sure? Why can't he ask somebody, for instance, and then he would be sure? Why is being unsure very critical to the plot of this book? When he says, "I can't be sure," it's almost like he doesn't care enough to find out. And that's why he can't be sure. Or there's also another great one, Kurt Vonnegut. A lot of people have read Kurt Vonnegut. His perhaps most classic book is Slaughterhouse-Five. And again, this will seem like the last one, but he wrote the first sentence of Slaughterhouse-Five is, "All of this happened, more or less." So did it happen or did it not happen? So we're about to hear a story, and basically Slaughterhouse-Five is one of Kurt Vonnegut's most famous books because it's his direct experience as a prisoner of war in World War II. He was captured by the Germans, and he was in Dresden with all the other prisoners of war when Dresden was firebombed. Everybody in Dresden essentially died, and except for the prisoners of war, because they were kept so far underground. So that's what this novel's about. So it's almost like the trauma of that, all this happened more or less. That's what the rest of the book feels like, is that it's so much trauma. It's almost, is he going to be a reliable author or a reliable storyteller or not? We don't yet know. We have to read to find out why that is a critical first line. Oh, I got to tell you one more. So Jennifer Egan, she's a more modern writer. One of my favorite books, A Visit from the Goon Squad. And she wrote the very first line of her novel. It began the usual way, in the bathroom of the Lassimo Hotel. So what is it? And what is the usual way? And why I can't even think of anything that the usual way, unless you're going to the bathroom, the usual way would occur in the bathroom. And then it's very interesting. She's so general, like it, usual way, the bathroom. But then she gives a specific detail, the Lassimo Hotel, which is, why is that? Why that specific hotel, that something called it, has there, you do something that's usual and it's in the bathroom of this very, very specific hotel. So I'll just say one more. Charles Bukowski's Post Office. So, you know, he wrote it in 3 weeks, this novel. It's his first novel. It began as a mistake. So I just, first lines, I love the art of the first line. And by the way, in a world dominated by TikTok, and I do think TikTok is an excellent form of entertainment, you know, you have to really, if you're writing a novel or any book, a nonfiction book, and so this course is focused on nonfiction books. I will do another course focused on fiction books. But a nonfiction book, you're competing against TikTok for eyeballs, for attention. And you have to start off very strong. The first line, the first paragraph, I talk about how to have a cliffhanger. Even in a nonfiction book, you need cliffhangers. Every chapter, sometimes every paragraph, sometimes every sentence. I mean, these sentences I just read to you were almost structured like cliffhangers. You have to know the arc of the hero, and you have to tell lots of stories. We were just talking to Ryan Holiday about the arc of the hero and storytelling. And we talked with Chuck Palahniuk, author of Fight Club, about the arc of the hero. We talked with Robert Greene about the arc of the hero. So this is such an important concept that I spend a lot of time on this in the course, because a nonfiction book, you need the arc of the hero throughout the book, every single chapter. I also talk about something that's very important to me when I'm writing. When you're writing a book, very important is you want to be completely authentic. It's just like when I was doing stand-up comedy. The audience is a great BS detector. They know when you're doing an act or when you're just talking. And the goal of a stand-up comedian is just to be up there as if you have never done comedy before and start just saying stuff that makes people laugh. And if they think you're doing a honed act, they can smell BS. They can smell fear also. So you have to just act like you're having a fun time. The party's up on the stage. They're invited. They can come or not. And it's the same thing with writing. You have to be totally authentic. So you have to ask, who are you? Why are you? Why now? So with every book you write, who are you to be writing this book? You know, are you an entrepreneur and you're writing about entrepreneurship? Are you someone who came from, let's say we're going to see books later about what's happening in Ukraine now. Were you a child in Ukraine and these hard experiences happened? Why are you? You have to ask the question, why are you? Which is an odd kind of question. Like, why do you do the things you do? Is it your, what's your mission in life? What is it your mission to spread the word about, you know, what happened in Ukraine? Is it your mission to write a novel about people who feel awkward and out of place in social situations that other people are totally comfortable in? And you write a novel about that. Are you someone who loves, you know, your mission is to create a better thriller than any thriller ever written, because it's in your head, all these ideas for thrillers. Like, why are you? And why now? Why now do we need this book? Why now do we need a book about the history of the presidency, for instance? Well, it's because there's so much controversy in presidential politics these days, much more than there was 10 years ago. And so, is this new? Is there a history to this? Like, why are you writing this book now? And so who are you? Why are you? Why now? And I talk a lot more about this in the very beginning of the course. Talk about time management. I give examples of the arc of the hero, even in nonfiction examples. I give all of my best writing tips, like I just load them in there. I talk about self-publishing versus traditional publishing and a lot of the myths that surround self-publishing. For instance, I don't know when this podcast will come out, but on May 5th on Apple Plus, I am so excited. I'm waiting for the TV series Silo to launch. It's a science fiction series. It's based on a bunch of books written by a friend of mine and former podcast guest, Hugh Howey. He was actually a podcast guest in 2014, one of my first guests. And he self-published the series Wool. And it sold millions and millions of copies. Eventually, Simon & Schuster republished it. And eventually, Apple Plus made it into a TV series launching May 5th, about 10 years after he wrote the very initial book, which he didn't think would sell at all. It was like a novella. And so many people asked him for a sequel that he wrote a whole series called Wool. Now it's going to be a TV series. So no one ever asks him, hey, you were just self-published. I'm not watching your TV series. It was just a great book. So I talk about self-publishing versus traditional publishing. I go step by step how to professionally self-publish your book. So it doesn't look like some, you know, low-grade self-published book. It looks like a professionally published book. No one would be able to tell the difference. I talk about, you know, how I personally learned storytelling kind of the hard way from writing, you know, thousands of bad stories and novels. And it took me 10 years to publish my first article. And then about another 2 years after that to publish my first book. I teach you from beginning to end how to write and publish your first book in 30 days. Doesn't have to be your first book, could be your second book or 10th book, but how to write a great book and publish it in 30 days. I go over the myths of writing. I go over the craft of it. I go over the four book concepts, which you could use. And I will, you know, for people who sign up for the course, I'll probably add book concepts along the way, but you could use any of these concepts to write a completely unique book that is unique to you. And, you know, ultimately, I talk a little bit about how to market your book, and I'm really proud of this course. It's the funnest thing I've done in at least 3 years, and I have so much pleasure helping people with their writing that I decided to make a course putting together everything I've learned about writing. And here I am, such a horrible self-promoter. You could get this course. The course is $179, and hopefully you will make millions of dollars writing books, but I can guarantee you, you'll make more than $179 if you write a book. But I should have had a money back guarantee there. Maybe at some point I will. But how to write and publish a book in 30 days. And again, if you go to Udemy and search for Altucher, you'll find the course. But better is go to jamesaltuchershow.com/writing. Don't go to jamesaltucher.com/writing. Go to jamesaltuchershow.com/writing. And it'll take you right to the front page of the course. What can I offer right now? If anyone, because of this podcast, goes and gets this course, I'll read and write a review on your first book or second book or whatever that you use this course to write the book and you put it on Amazon. I will go to the Amazon page and review it. So I promise that. Just my email is altucher@gmail.com. Send me your manuscript or point me to the book. I will buy the book. Just don't charge $1,000 for it. You know, I'll charge a normal price and I will review the book if you sign up for the course because of this podcast. So it's how to write and publish a book in 30 days. Go to jamesaltuchershow.com/writing and it'll take you right to the course. I am so proud of this course. I really hope you get it and that you learn from it. And review it and rank it and tell me how much you loved it. And if you have any questions at all, feel free to write me altucher@gmail.com. I will try to answer everything. And good luck. Good luck on your writing journey. I will say the writing journey has been incredible for me and has created so many opportunities, so many interesting and fascinating life experiences. It's really worth it to write your book. Thanks again.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble.
Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.